Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Bad With Money Mailbag episode. It's me, your host, Gabe S. Dunn. Welcome, welcome. Say hello to my little dog. Oop, he made a little growling noise. If you're watching this on video on Patreon, patreon.com/Gabe S. Dunn, you will see my little puppy. His head's so small. This is a show where we read your mail and your comments. But today it's the mail, baby. So we got some stuff in regards to the toxic nonprofit workplace call that I put out. And there's some doozies. It turns out people have worked at some toxic nonprofits. So I'll read a couple of these and we'll see what you guys think about it if you want to write in and give your first impressions or your own experiences. So this is a message from C. Extensive experience with toxic nonprofits. Hey, Gabe, longtime listener, first time emailer. I'm a late 30s liberal white cishet lady. So, of course, I've had extensive experience in nonprofits. I have a master's degree in museum studies and have spent many years working in fine art museums, pop culture museums, medical nonprofits, and have finally landed at the government. A combination of PSLF forgiveness and a need to not be contributing to someone else's bottom line has kept me out of private corporate jobs. But a need to actually make enough money to survive is what caused me to make the final move from the museum work that I love to the government job I'm currently in. I have watched executive directors spew blatantly racist comments, make direct classist comments to myself about whether or not I was the right type to promote, have been lied to about salaries, and have watched far more intelligent women than I be paid far under their worth for decades. I have been shown that the structure of most fine art museums is that it is a job for a wife or a partner of someone with corporate wealth, and it is assumed that only those fitting those molds would succeed. If you didn't have access to the ability to portray wealth while making almost minimum wage, with the student debt of a graduate degree no less, you were unable to make your way. I have watched many of my friends and family fight in corporate settings to be paid their worth, but never has it been as exhausting and fruitless as those of us who worked so hard in the nonprofits we loved to be able to buy groceries. I loved my jobs I held in those museums, but there was no way I could live a life and work them simultaneously. I'm happy to get further in depth about this, but as I'm a government employee, I would want it to be anonymous. Love your show and who you are. Best, C. Wow. Yeah, I would love for you to get into that more. It seems like the passion tax, which Amina Altai talked to us about, I believe, is real, where it's if you are passionate about your job and you really care, such as something like a nonprofit, you are willing to give it your all, but you are not compensated for giving it your all. So what Amina was talking about is working for social justice causes, in this case, museums, you know, gender affirming care, climate change, things like that, where you are extra passionate about it, such as this person said, not giving in to someone else's bottom line. You know, you are more likely to give more of your time and your effort and your body to the job because you really care about it, but you're not compensated in the same way. And I do want to say that people who are about to say, well, nonprofits don't make enough money, these nonprofits actually really do. Like, a lot of these places do make enough money to compensate their workers fairly, and they just simply don't. So here is a message from Kent, similarly along these lines. Hi, Gabe, longtime listener, and I'm delighted to tell you about the toxic world of nonprofits. I have spent 15 years in the sector and have worked at multiple organizations that have varied in size, population served, and mission. Each of them has been toxic in their own way. I left my first nonprofit job to fulfill a graduate school requirement. A short time after I left, I had dinner with colleagues who were in more senior roles than I had been. mostly directors. I had been a coordinator, if that makes sense to anyone listening. And was astonished when one of my coworkers told me, I realized that you did a lot for Sheila, my boss, but I didn't realize you were doing her job for her until you left and she fell flat on her face. I should also mention that the white male executive director of that org, which was a community-based organization in the Bronx that predominantly served low-income communities of color, was prone to running out of his office in a rage into the main office and would scream about staff members calling them the N-word and other things. What? Oh my God. Whoa, that is beyond. Okay, wow. Several years later, I was working at another organization, which actually in itself was fine, that advocated for school equity issues. One afternoon, we were visited by someone working at another organization that the organization we worked for supposedly partnered with, came and slapped us with a cease and desist order because the org I worked for had created flyers with publicly available data, which was a common practice for orgs working the space. However, given that this other org was much larger and much more well-known than my employer at the time, the real point of this meeting was to make us scrap our materials and hinder our marketing efforts or bankrupt the fledgling org fighting a nuisance lawsuit in court. In the end, we abandoned the flyers and took a new approach. What? That is so controlling and wild. Oh my gosh. Okay, wow. The last place I worked before my current employer may have been the most interesting of all. Because it had a celebrity founder, it wasn't unusual for the whole team to be told to abandon ship on what they were working on because the famous founder had a new idea we should pursue instead of the current strategy. Oh God, that's so annoying. There was almost no rationale offered other than that this person said so. The organization positioned itself as being progressive, but I was absolutely subjected to the most sexism and classism I have experienced anywhere. Over lunch at a conference where I was eating curried goat, my boss remarked that they were so proud of me for trying something new for lunch. My siblings in Christ, even though I am a white cis woman, it is well known that I had grown up in New York City and often spoke about the wonderful experience of having been exposed to a multitude of cultures as a result. I had most certainly had curried goat before that day. It was also super common for my male colleagues to have all manner of outbursts or act in what I would classify as questionable behavior. Still, anytime I tried to stand up or speak up for myself, much would be made about how emotional I was and how personal I took everything. By the end of my time there, I had stopped trying to get my coworkers to like me. Often my coworkers wouldn't even say good morning to me in the office or speaking to anyone unless spoken to. When I did, I was usually riddled with anxiety, thinking about what kind of multi-paragraph email I would receive about how my behavior had been problematic. To be clear, I never did anything crazy like urinate on a desk or turn in shoddy work or miss deadlines when all I did was express an opinion. Okay, wow. Did someone urinate on a desk? I see what you're doing here. Yeah, like you didn't even do anything untoward and then anything that could be classified as bad behavior in the workplace that isn't, you know, next level, but rather just sort of missing deadlines, right? That there was no regulation between you receiving reprimanding or backlash for behavior that could range in problematicness. So I do understand what you're saying there, but wow. I'm sure you're wondering if I still work in the field. I am doing this because I am within reach of having all my student loans forgiven through PSLF. However, it's hard to say what my next move will be when that comes through. Best regards, Kent. Yeah, so it seems like a lot of you just work at these places in order to get student loan forgiveness. Or that's why you stay beyond what is toxic. Oh boy. Well, if anyone has any other stories to write in about their ability to get student loan forgiveness for public service, or if you worked at a toxic nonprofit and you have other stories like this, maybe someone did urinate on your desk. I don't know. Write in because these have been really eye-opening. Not to like harp on, you know, nonprofits. We just had an amazing interview with our guest, Carrie Sun, who talked about what it was like to work for a billionaire boss and that sort of toxic workplace. But so like, you know, if you worked at a corporation or for someone where it was just as bad, if not worse, you know what? Nonprofits or corporations, write in if you've had a really bad workplace. I would love to hear. It's almost like gossip that doesn't have to do with me. So please, write in. I have been using Mint to manage my finances, but bad news, Mint has shut down. But here's the good news. there's a better alternative, Monarch Money. That's right. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarch.com/badmoney. It is very stressful, confusing, and time-consuming to manage my finances. I try all the apps, as you guys know, and I've just been like flighty with them. They've never stuck. But now I have Monarch, and it is easy to use. It has powerful features like collaboration tools, intuitive design, personalization, product improvements. It's just been really helpful to see everything laid out and especially be able to collaborate if I want to. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Yeah, we've talked about that a lot here. Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, collaborate on your budget, and get insights on your cash flow and recurring transactions. It's the easiest way to manage your household finances. Are you saving for a down payment, a wedding, a dream vacation? Monarch makes it so easy to help you reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Of course, I've been frustrated in the past with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads. So was Monarch. So they built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Experience a personal finance app that prioritizes the user experience above all else. We never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/badmoney. That's monarchmoney.com/badmoney for your extended 30-day free trial. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. I don't know if you know, but I'm a business myself. And I have to run everything on my own. And it is very difficult, especially to deliver you a product such as this podcast. Luckily, I have Melissa to help me. And we want to keep all the money that we make. So how do we do that? NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit from NetSuite. Everything is so expensive. How do I boost performance? How do I pay everyone? How do I cut costs? Here you go. You want inventory? You want financial systems in the cloud? You got it, baby. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/badwithmoney. 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 We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring in one place so easy. Like, think about how much you have to do in order to hire someone and how much you have to gather, plus scheduling, plus messaging. Like, if I was looking to hire someone, I would feel that it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish that I could use Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Just go to Indeed.com/badwithmoney right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/badwithmoney. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. This is a message from M. And it's on a totally different subject. Gabe, I need help. I am 21 years old and totally lost while trying to figure out ways to maximize my savings. Every time I get ready to open an investment account or credit card, I get freaked out and overwhelmed by losing access to my savings or losing money or just generally fucking up. I'm not sure if I've heard your thoughts on a certificate of deposit or whether this has been discussed on the show. A CD has been the most palatable option for me to ease into investing or using my savings, other than it just sitting in a savings account. Are CDs a good idea? I have no idea. Any help appreciated, and I love you so much. You're so funny and kind, and I appreciate your openness so much. Best, M. Well, M, I phoned a friend. So I asked someone I know who knows a lot about CDs. They shall remain anonymous. And I said, what do you know about CDs? I've never done that. Have you? They said, I thought putting money in CDs were fine, but I didn't like it because the yields aren't as good as treasuries. They're less flexible and they have state taxes on the interest. So treasuries are like T-bills, like treasury bills. If someone literally needs to stop themselves from spending, then I guess it could be good. So M, here we go. And you get the tax-exempt government interest through a money market fund like VUSXX if you don't want to deal with actually buying T-bills. So buying T-bills is a whole thing. You have to keep track of them and you have to watch when they mature. So if you don't want to have to do all of that work, this person is saying a CD could be good. I would bring up money market accounts, which can't have a loss. At worst, they would just have not very high interest. So in a way, they're similar to a CD, but it's simpler and you can move some funds from the money market fund to an index fund once you're ready to invest. So your concerns being about what to do with your money or losing money in the sense that, you know, you're worried that you might pick the wrong thing or that, you know, your fund would lose money. This is a way in which it wouldn't actually lose money. It would just, you know, you would just fluctuate on interest, or you might get, you know, a fund that doesn't have very high interest. I will say maximizing your savings. Again, I'm a big proponent of the high yield savings account. You can look into Tori Dunlap and her first 100K. She's a big proponent of high yield savings accounts. I have one. The interest is pretty, you know, like 4 or 5%, which is great. You can also put stuff into an investment account that's just a regular investment account. I'm redoing all of that for myself now. So I opened a Vanguard account. I'm going to put money into it. Don't worry about, you know, where you put it. I would just put it in an index fund or an ETF, S&P 500 fund that invests in the top 500 companies. I'm going to even just put in very little right now because I can't really afford to do more than that. And in that way, you might lose money, but you're investing for the long term, I would hope. So if it's a savings, you're investing hopefully to have, you know, 3 to 5 years, but the market fluctuates so much. So if you're investing in order to have something way later, like you want it to, you know, have savings for the next 50 years, I would do an investment account that's also a retirement account. That way you don't get, you know, you can figure out what sort of tax exempt status works best for you. That being said, you really want to make sure that so two things you want to look at is when the taxes come out on each one, or if you do have to pay taxes on them. So different types of retirement accounts, and also what the taxes would be on a high yield savings account. So you want to make sure that if you're paying taxes on that account, it doesn't completely eat up the benefits that you would get from having, like, you know, 4 or 5% interest growing on the account. I don't know that much about certificates of deposit. I don't really know that much about T-bills, to be honest. I just know that I have friends that invest in T-bills more so than I know people who are using CDs. So that's just anecdotal evidence on my end. I also, you know, there's such a thing, and I've talked about it on this show, as a health savings account and a flexible savings account. Health savings rolls over. Flexible savings, you really only have like a certain time frame within to use them. So I hope that that's helpful in some ways. Maybe we'll do an episode exclusively about CDs and T-bills or treasuries. Maybe that'll, you know, get into more specifics if you want more specifics, or if people want to write in if they have more specifics. I'm really just starting over. Like, I had invested 30K in an Ameritrade account, which now is Schwab, I think. And then I had to pull it because of my quote unquote divorce. And now I'm just starting over with Vanguard because Vanguard has the Vanguard index fund, which is typically very good. And it's something that if you listen to Money with Katie, she's very into. So that's what I'm trying now. It's trial and error. I do have my SEP in which, you know, I put my retirement money. That is also tax exempt. So if you're worried about losing money, I would just do money market. But if you know, I'm not, again, like, I don't have credentials. I'm just telling you what I do and what I've anecdotally heard friends do. So if you are an expert, let me know. If you're in the Discord channel is great for this kind of thing. So if you want to hop into the Discord and ask people, everyone is super nice, like, and answers questions, like, really lovingly and thoughtfully. And it's very cute. And they have more knowledge than I do, actually. I end up reading from the Discord a lot. Hope that helps a little bit. And let me know what you end up doing. This is a story that Melissa pulled for me, but I was seeing it going around and I actually was like really intrigued by it and really moved by it. And I do think that this is something that we should talk about more. So this news story is about the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, tuition for which is over $63,000 a year. And so doing what everyone should be doing, a $1 billion donation was made to the school because it will provide students with free tuition moving forward. Dr. Ruth Gottsman, former professor and chair of the school's board of trustees, announced in a press release on Monday that they will give a massive donation, a transformational gift, the school said, one of the largest ever made to a university in the United States, seemingly the largest ever made to an American medical school, and it will ensure that no student at Einstein will ever have to pay tuition again. This is according to an ABC News story, but I've been seeing this everywhere. It's been all over my Instagram. All fourth-year students will be reimbursed for their spring 2024 semester tuition. And beginning at the start of the next term, all students moving forward will receive free tuition at Albert Einstein School of Medicine. That is so wild. This is something that every single billionaire should do. Every single one. All of them. There's no excuse. It will create a system of doctors that will be more diverse, come from different backgrounds in order to better understand patients. It's amazing. She did this in honor of her late husband, David Gottsman, who was the founder of First Manhattan Co. and an early investor in, Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. But never mind, he passed away. And Ruth, who's 93 years old, he left her the money and she said, I'm going to give it to the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. I am completely gagged by this. And I shouldn't be, because it should be entirely normalized. And I don't know if her husband wanted her to do this or if she just waited for him to die and then just said, this is what I'm going to do. But I did see a thing where I think she said that it was on the condition that they never change the name of the college, if I remember correctly. This is the New York Times article about it. In a condition of her gift, the Einstein College of Medicine should not change its name from Albert Einstein. The name, she noted, could not be beat. We've got the gosh darn name. We've got Albert Einstein. So for some reason, she wanted to make sure that they never changed the name of the school. That seems to be a big part of it. I'm not sure why. If you have thoughts on why, I would love to hear them. It seems like a very funny little thing to make contingent on her donation, but I don't know. She doesn't really explain it other than to say that he's the main guy. And she says, we have terrific medical students, but this will open it up for many other students whose economic status is such that they wouldn't even think of going to medical school. She also was asked what she thought her late husband would think of the idea. And she said, I hope he's smiling and not frowning, but he gave me the opportunity to do this, so I think he would be happy. I hope so. It's not the first medical school to eliminate tuition. In 2018, New York University announced it would begin offering free tuition to medical students and saw a surge in applications. She also had to be convinced to put her name on the donation. She didn't want anyone to know for a while. She wasn't like sure about getting recognition for it, but eventually she got convinced to do it. I think because she did get convinced that it would be nice to do it in her husband's name because he did pass away. Wild. Absolutely wild story. I am still wondering why that was her one contingent, you know, but I don't know. We'll see if this causes some sort of trickle down effect. I got to think maybe not, because people just don't care. But who knows? Maybe. Hey guys, Gabe Dunn here. I just wanted to let you guys know that I have a Patreon at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. And on that Patreon, I'm going to start doing live hangs with everyone who is a patron. So if you want to join the Patreon, you can get all these episodes ad-free, videos of our mailbag episodes, extra writing from me, blogs, fiction, other stuff, things that I'm thinking about with regards to money and personal stories. And also now live hangs with me on Zoom once a month. So join the Patreon. And if you're not a member of the Discord, hop on over to the Discord. That's free. The link will be in the description. It's so fun. So many of you guys talk over there. It's like truly popping off. And if you're on the Discord, I would love to see you in the live hang so I get to put a face to a name. So yeah, please join patreon.com/GabeSDunn and come hang out with me. Oh my gosh. Budgeting is wild. I am trying to make progress every day. I am, as you guys know, like deeply into rebuilding my finances. It is very hard to keep motivated, but I am constantly looking at the numbers, constantly like looking at ways to cut stuff. And I'm looking for new ways to save. And when I do, I can find my financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. With a Chime checking account, you get features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, or get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. Learn more at chime.com/badmoney. I have constantly had to deal with overdraft fees my entire life. When I first learned what they were upon getting my first bank account, it was a very rude awakening. I also learned about something when I was writing my book, where a lot of banks take out money from your account in the order that makes you have overdraft fees, which is so unfair. But Chime allows you an overdraft of up to $200 with no fees. Join millions of Chime members who are working on financial progress. Chime helps you make progress with fee-free overdraft up to $200. Your next deposit is applied to your balance. Get spotted on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals. No monthly fees or maintenance fees. Over 60,000 fee-free ATMs. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion. Friends give friends a boost. Eligible members get complimentary boosts to increase a friend's SpotMe limit. When you give a boost, they can boost you back to raise your limit. Set up direct deposit into your Chime account. After a qualifying direct deposit of $200 or more, Chime will notify you to enroll in SpotMe. With an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance. Your next direct deposit is applied to your negative balance. Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/badmoney. That's chime.com/badmoney. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so this is a question from a very interesting discussion that happened on the Discord, and I'll link to the Discord below. But this is a discussion about gold and the price of gold. Tyler writes, "Can someone smarter than me explain something? Let's take Bitcoin or gold. Gold is worth X amount of dollars. When we find more gold, the price of gold goes down because there's more of it. Why? Aren't we just choosing that? Isn't it just made up? If you drop something, it falls because of gravity. Couldn't we just say, gold is worth X per ounce, and that just be true no matter what?" And then May responds, "I'm not sure we could. Scarcity, supply, and demand is one component. When there's more of something, then demand and the price go down. When there's less of something than what people want, the price goes up. Otherwise, those that have gold would have to just sit on it if nobody was willing to buy it at the standardized price. Conversely, there might not be anyone willing to sell it at the standard price or to mine it. We also see fluctuations in the strength of the U.S. dollar relative to other currencies. Since gold is an international commodity, if the USD gets weaker, then an ounce of gold will cost more than USD, even if it costs the same amount of rupees or yen or whatever. So if we agree in USD, then USD got weak, someone could exchange funds for another currency and buy a bunch of gold, then sell it somewhere else where they hadn't agreed on a constant price. It'd be tricky to get all nations everywhere to agree and basically fix all our economies to a gold standard at this point. We used to be on one, but I think that would be unusual. Someone else responds, the short answer is yes, we theoretically could set 1 ounce of gold at a certain price and keep it there, but it would require a lot of people to agree to do it. So very similar to what May said. Remember, things only have value if people believe they do. The entire global economy and all of its niches were made up by humans in the past, and rules are frequently added, removed, changed. We could get rid of the entire thing at any time if we collectively decided to do so. We existed before the economy, and I really hope that we exist after the economy. If someone else is willing to buy it for X dollars plus one, then buy all of the gold, travel somewhere else, wherever someone else is, and sell it to them, then, like this other person said, we would all have to agree on it. So it's very interesting because it has to do with money in a broader sense, wherein that any changes to it would have to be agreed upon by everyone. And I just don't see that happening. People are too greedy to do that. Then Tyler says, thanks, everyone. I guess my point is the price of gold going up and down isn't going to happen unless people decide it does. Can't help but feel like money's just all made up. Well, yeah. Yeah, Tyler, it is. Then Tyler comes up with a better analogy while driving to work. So here's the analogy. Let's say four friends are playing a card game. Everyone can win the card game, but they have to start with 10 cards in their hand to win. Three friends all have 10 cards. One of them has five by no fault of their own. The three friends also want their fourth friend to win the game, so they all agree to print five more cards and give them to the fourth friend. There's literally no reason outside of the choice of humans why the 35 cards that already existed have to be worth less now. It's not like gravity where if you drop something, it falls. The friends could agree, this person should be able to win too, and to do so, we're going to generate more cards and give them to you. Now everyone can win since that has nothing to do with the worth of our cards, and we still only need 10 to win. Does that make sense? I know things work the way they do, but I guess I'm saying if we print more money, nothing about inflation or the worth of the dollar or interest rates or anything else changes other than because we collectively decide it does, right? Then boring Stephanie pops in. This touches on why money stuff is so deeply interesting and reminds me of another book I read in college, aka The Stone Age. Oh, Stephanie, stop. It was about LTCM, a hedge fund that fell apart after Russia defaulted on its debt around 1998. A person interviewed discussed types of financial insurance, i.e. insurance that pays out if certain financial events take place, and pointed out how it is different from regular insurance. If you insure against damage from an earthquake, the existence of the insurance does not change the likelihood of an earthquake. With insurance against financial events, it does, because other people can change their behavior and cause the bad event to happen. Yes, very similar to the stock market. Extremely similar to what we talked about in the episode about dumb money, where like this is how the stock market kind of works. And then May says, that's the concept of moral hazard, right? Which I have not heard of moral hazard, actually. I think it is very closely related, Stephanie says. I would describe moral hazard as a situation where a person or business or entity has less financial incentive to behave properly due to factors, where factors could be something like buying your own insurance or backstopping by a government or other party. In insurance, people say the adoption of safety devices creates moral hazard. Like American football players wearing helmets means they now have less incentive to bash other players too hard. Or if I have flood insurance for my home, I have less incentive to prevent floods, aka moral hazard. Yes, so on The New Guys, which is my other show, we interviewed Harrison Brown talking about women's hockey. And he was saying that because women's hockey has more rules against violence on the ice, women are less prepared for violence on the ice because they're not trained using it. So there actually is more injuries in women's hockey because women aren't taught to defend against it the same way men are, under the assumption that there would be violence. So because the assumption is there's no violence, there actually ends up being more violence. And this is what Stephanie's talking about. Actually, that's a great example of moral hazard. So then Kilo writes, money is a fiction we all agree on. Property is a fiction we all agree on. Ditto for the concept of ownership, government, law, ethics, and many others. Why do you own your clothes? Because we all agree that the clothes you are currently wearing are owned by you. And if you took them off, that didn't mean you didn't own them anymore. Like if I found your sock on the front lawn and ran away with it and told people I have this sock, If anyone asked, how did you come to have this sock? And I told them I found it over there and I took it and I have it now. Since we all agree that you are the one that owns the sock, they would likely tell me to return it or tell you that I have it or take it from me and give it back to you. We all agree so much about this that if I took something of yours that was expensive, like your car, the state would send people with guns to come get the car back. And if I fired a warning shot to say, I have this car, ownership is a legal fiction, the people with guns would fire very real bullets at me, likely until I was dead. That's how much we all agree on the fiction of ownership. We pay people to kill those who do not believe. So in your card scenario, you would print more cards so the fourth friend would win, but no one in that scenario believes the cards are valuable or wants the friend to lose. But we want the money in our pockets and bank accounts mean something. We want it a lot. We want it to mean so much that we turn on the fourth guy with only five cards and say, hey, do something for us and we will make more cards and give them to you so you can win. Also in your scenario, to make it closer to life, the three friends get done creating two cards and a new someone walks in and says, I am willing to trade something for one of these cards. And the three friends who would like something more than having a fourth friend win. So they trade that card for something instead of giving the fourth friend two cards. I guess also to make your scenario more realistic, more and more people keep coming over to the house and they also want 10 cards to win. And so the three friends are busy making cards and trading them to these new people for things. And then at some point, the fourth friend now only has like 7 cards and looks at his three friends who are making 10 cards every hour and getting more and more things and says, hey guys, why can't you just give me 3 more cards so I can win the game? And the first three friends say, what the hell are you doing over there? We've been making thousands of cards while you've been doing nothing to make more cards. Go make your own cards if you want to win so badly. Make your own cards and you can trade it to those people who want to win and they will give you stuff. You may never have all 10 cards, but after a few years, you'll have lots of stuff. Oh my God. This is so interesting, Kilo. This is so interesting that you have explained this. I love this. I take it back. If this was real life, one of the rich friends would tell the poor friend, I will loan you a card, but you have to pay me back 2 cards in 30 days. And the poor friend, after 30 days, would only have 4 cards. Nothing is stopping us from giving our cards away right now. But we don't because we think if we did something to earn those cards, we all agree those cards have value. And if someone does something for us, food, water, shelter, entertainment, we will give them some of our cards. My parents worked their whole lives to give me these cards. Why should I give some to you? Okay, I will tear a little corner off this card and give it to you so you don't starve. I'm not a monster. I'm a good person. Everyone clap about how good I'm being by giving away a tiny bit of my card so this person can eat. Also in real life, rich friends need to pay for water, food, and shelter. So either they have to give up the occasional card in exchange for those things, or they need to do something to get water, food, and shelter so they can maintain having 10 cards. I hate that I'm writing a book here without being able to say, does this make sense? And then adjust accordingly. But in theory, if we just printed more US dollars and put them in everyone's bank accounts, evenly distributed for no reason, everyone would raise the price of goods in US dollars and keep it the same price for the euro, the yen, the peso, and it would take more US dollars to equal the same amount of foreign currency and the, AKA the exchange rate. To harp on Georgism or the single tax again, if we taxed property, land, and got $1 trillion and then distributed that $1 trillion out to every US citizen, we wouldn't be printing money and the unhoused might have a chance. Then just repeat that every year. The unhoused will spend it on food, water, shelter, entertainment, which is being generated by the property owners anyway. It's a win-win, but also has its own problems, but better than the system we have. Kilo, do you want to run for president? Or I guess like head of the Fed? This is amazing. All that being said, the US prints more money all the time. They just aren't focused on getting it to the friend with only 5 cards. And then Marianne, who is an economist, friendly neighborhood economist, writes responses. Okay, here we go. Money is a social choice that holds up because we keep being able to exchange, physical or virtual, tokens of stored purchasing power for goods and services and other stores of value. One of the costs of hyperinflation in an economy is that paper, SIN, electronic, money capacity to store value is badly compromised. So people stop using it, and that makes trading goods and services and assets a pain in the neck. People used to believe, some people still believe, that gold, silver, copper, electrum, maybe other alloys were uniquely qualified to function as exchange tokens because their preservation of value came in part from their value as physical objects, something electronic credits or even bits of special paper don't really have. During the gold standard, international exchange rates were kept constant by each participant government's willingness to keep the monetary price of gold in its country constant. Yes, this is what we were talking about above. And by gold being traded internationally, this was done by having the government always willing to buy or sell gold at the target price. later that was shaded a bit to give the U.S. government a little more space by having laws that limited the rights of residents or firms to hold or trade gold. Now that we do not have a gold standard, the price of gold varies in response to movements in demand for or supply of gold. Say if gold bugs convince a lot of marks to invest in commemorative gold coins, which always hold their value, increasing demand, or when gold began to be used to make computer chips and that market exploded, or on the supply side, in response to new strikes in mines or some maniac buying up and locking up enough gold to make a difference on world markets, for instance, on the supply side. If an alteration in supply or demand leads to people who want to be able to sell at what has been the prevailing price are unable to do so, some would-be sellers may lower their asking price a bit. And if the price then drops, some former sellers will no longer want to sell. There's a tendency for the price of gold to drop and the quantity traded to fall until a price at which everyone wants to sell or buy is able to fulfill their plans. So again, kind of like the stock market. On the other side, if at what has been the prevailing price of gold, some buyers are unable to fulfill their plans, some of them will choose to offer a slightly higher price, which may draw more sellers back into the market. So yes, all human decisions, but no hugger-mugger about price changes when gold is traded as a commodity. As for money, there's a lot to say, and probably people don't want to read it right now after reading about gold prices. But yes, it's like cards, because employing anything with intrinsic value as a trade token wastes its intrinsic usefulness. However, while there's little or no individual person hugger-mugger about the quantity of money in circulation, it is managed generally by a central bank or directly by a government, because money is a tremendous tool to make exchanging goods and services easier. There are far-right libertarians who maintain that no management is necessary or useful in the supply of money, but to illustrate my very different opinion, I would say, have a good look at the free banking era in the United States if you don't find that brief and tumultuous history of crypto convincing. Ooh. Wait, I'm going to look up the word hugger-mugger, because I wonder if that's like an actual term. Well, interesting. It seems to be a name for a type of yoga, but it is actually an insult for a confused and disorderly person, a jumbler. Wow. I don't know where you got that word, but amazing. Marianne said, I mean, people getting together in small surreptitious groups to make plans that will affect others who are not consulted. Okay, that's your definition. I did not find that anywhere. But I like that definition. I got it from the context. Marianne then goes on about the card situation, saying, it involves an understanding of the monetary system, which takes a while to explain. Glad to do so if anyone's interested, but we're talking about three friends, actually, not metaphorically. There's a major question. Is anyone but these three accepting the cards in exchange for goods and services? And if so, why? Ooh, interesting. My four friends scenario was just an attempt to illustrate my question, which boils down to essentially, money isn't a scientific fact. I understand how money works and how inflation works and why we can't just print more money, but I'm just confirming it's all made up and because we choose to. If more money is printed, absolutely nothing happens without human intervention. Why can't we change that human intervention? I guess what I'm saying is money isn't like gravity, which is out of our hands. You are correct that money is a social invention. It has been reinvented with a variety of different results, and both laws and policy connected with money can be changed and have been changed. Were you thinking of any particular change? I would never dream of knowing how we should change it. While I understand it in a personal finance way, I'm certainly not someone who should recommend economic policy. That being said, it frustrates me that we, society, have created a system and continue to use a system that causes such massive inequality when it's all human intervention. Yes, that is true. Marianne then says, please remember that debt isn't the same as money. It makes a difference if you're in conversation with macroeconomists or macroeconomic monetary policy news. I feel as if I should say that rules of the money game that have changed very substantially in the U.S. over the past couple hundred years include who can issue money, under what terms, whether there is a central bank and what its relationship with what allowed commercial banks are, whether paper monetary tokens are exchangeable for gold or silver, what percentage of deposits in commercial banks, the banks that are required to hold in liquid form against the withdrawals that they profit by making use of the rest, what commercial banks are permitted to invest in, and regulations on credit card lending that as near money affects the leverage monetary policy has. And from outside government, financial innovations such as the near money cryptocurrency for obvious example. Oh my God. Okay, so the why can't we just print more money question is so dependent on so many factors. If you want to read more at the Discord, absolutely head on over. There are some really smart people there. You can read through it. I'm trying to give you a TLDR, but I'm not going to do it justice. So just go ahead and read through the Discord. Those are the types of conversations you'll get there, and they're extremely brilliant. So thank you so much to everyone who writes in. Thank you so much to anyone who cares enough to provide all of this information, to use their expertise. It means so much to me. And if you want to write in, you can do so at gabeisbadwithmoney@gmail.com. You can also leave a voice memo if you'd prefer. I love hearing voice memos. They really add some spice and diversity to the listening experience. If you want to write a message to me on Patreon, you can join at patreon.com/GabeSDunn. There's ad-free episodes there, plus like behind-the-scenes goodies and other stuff, other writing. And yeah, I'm going to let you go into your Friday. Thank you so much. You can follow me at GabeSDunn on Instagram. And also you can follow Bad With Money at BWM Pod. Let me know what you think about any of this. Please write in. I love hearing everyone's opinions. I, as you can listen to, I don't know everything. If anyone has information about CDs that they want to give for M, if anyone has like advice about working for a toxic nonprofit, really anything helps, because we're all here to learn from each other. So I love you guys. Bye. Bad With Money with Gabe Shane Dunn is a production of Noted Bisexual, produced by Melissa D. Montz and Diamond M. Print Productions, edited by Diane King, post-production sound by Coco Lorenz, and music by Mike Kaplan, Zach Sherwin, and Jack Dolgen, as sung by Sam Barbera. Thank you. Love you. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.